Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning or evening, friend. Here's your friendly announcer. I have serious news to pass on to everybody. What I'm about to say could mean the world's disaster, could change your joy and laughter to
we've got to
Shaping Destiny. I am your host and sponsor, Dr. Yvette Kinnerig. And the song that you were just listening to is called Pasha by Mr. Barry Weber, who is a native-born American who lives in Brooklyn, New York. And this is our second episode. I want to say goodnight to all our listeners. Thank you for tuning in. I would also like to welcome those of you who are here for the first time and say thank you for those of you who are rejoining us. And those are the ones who were with us last week. I also have in the studio with me Dr. Ron Robinson, and he is helping me with the switchboard. I see that the switchboard is lit up. I had a lot of positive feedback from those of you who were on last week's program. Many of you have asked for a recording of the program. You can find the program by logging into https://www.blogtalkradio.com/theneonation. You can also find the recording by logging into my website, www.kyle.net, and Kyle is spelled C as in Charlie, H as in Harry, A as in Adam, Y as in Yellow, E as in Early, L as in London.net, www.kyle.net. So tonight we will continue the discussion that we began last week, and we will follow up that discussion by talking about the theory of race. At this time I would invite you to call at least two of your friends. Don't be happy alone. Have them tune into this program. Let them know that some good stuff is going on here tonight. To join, they can call in 347-857-1311. That number again is 347-857-11. Pardon me, 1311. Again, 347-857-1311. Or you can log in to https://www.blogtalkradio.com/theneonation. And I'm going to correct myself by saying the call-in number is 347-857-1311. So now we're going to start by looking at racism and what racism is. Currently, when we talk about racism, we immediately see a divide between people of different ethnicity or race. So you might see a divide between black and white, or you might hear about Caucasian and Africans or non-Caucasian. But slavery did not mark the beginning of racism. Racism did not start with slavery. Racism started in religion. And we might get to this tonight, but if we don't, I will certainly be discussing the religions and from where racism specifically emanated. Now, slavery did not start racism, but slavery extended and polarized racism as an institution, especially here in the United States. There was a theory that was promulgated in 1989 called the critical race theory. And in essence, what the critical race theory says is that race is not a phenomenon that is grounded in the existence of differences in physical features. So I was having a discussion with one of my friends about this, and he said, you know, you don't see it among the animals, so you won't see a white dog saying, I won't sleep with a brown dog or a black dog, or a sheep saying, I would not have anything to do with a black sheep. This is not something, racism is not something that is rooted in biological traits or physical features. It is a system that is created, was created to exploit, humiliate, and keep in bondage a group of persons. Racism is grounded in legal, political, and social systems that are designed to maintain the dominance of one group over another. So, when we look back at ancient civilizations, specifically the Greek and the Roman civilization, we see the foundations of discrimination there. However, in those societies, the system of dominance and subjugation was a system based on a class system between the haves and the have-nots. The aristocrats and the proletariats, or the working class. And in the U.S. in modern times, racism is really an economic system that is placed based on two classes, one class of those that have and another class of those that have not. But a dynamic thing was put into the mix, and it was making a delineation between persons based on the color of their skin, their facial properties, and their family of origin. Now, racism as we know it today is a fallout from a system of discrimination that is grounded in religion. One of the things that I want to say is that if we were to understand the system as one of dominance and subjugation, one of those who have and those who have not, we will find that there is a clear line that cuts down the middle, and that line has nothing to do with race. However, racism was fostered. It was fostered to ensure that those people who did not have, the oppressed people, they will never come together to unite to overthrow a system that is discriminatory and oppressive to them. So the institution of racism was born out of religion, and it was formalized and instituted with impunity in current American systems. Unfortunately, this system of discrimination forged by legalizing oppression and poverty has spread globally and now pervades the entire globe. I remember one time a man of a different color and ethnicity looked at me and called me a loser. This, he thought, was fitting, even though I hold 3 doctoral degrees, 4 master's degrees, and today I have 29 published books. This person could in no way put his foot in my shoes when it came to academic achievements, but yet I was defined as a loser. I learned from my experience that being black meant that you were a loser, and there is nothing that one can do to escape the institution of slavery or the plague of racism, the legal, sociocultural, and economic plague of racism that people of African descent and certainly people of other races as well, even though it is not as poignant where that is concerned, and I would say again it is a matter of division of the classes, divide and rule, so that the poor and the oppressed of the world will not come together to resist and oppose unjust and unlawful conditions that are legalized and promulgate racism and poverty and oppression. We want to stop now to listen to one of the legend Bob Marley's song, War, his philosophy, on racism.
Until the philosophy which hold one race superior and another inferior is finally and permanently discredited and abandoned. Everywhere is war. It's a war that until they're no longer first class and second class citizens of any nation, until the color of a man's skin is of no more significance than the color of his eyes, Mr. War, that until the basic human rights are equally guaranteed to all without regard to race, it is a war. That until that day, the dream of lasting peace, world citizenship, rule of international morality, will remain in but a fleeting illusion to be pursued, but never attained. Now everywhere is war. War. And until the ignoble and unhappy regime that hold our brothers in Angola, in Mozambique, South Africa, subhuman bondage, have been toppled, totally destroyed. Well, everywhere is war. Is there war? War in the east, war in the west, war up north, war down south. War, war. Rumors of a war. And until that day, the
You're listening to Empowering Lives and Shaping Destinies, and we just heard the legend, Bob Marley, and his thoughts or his philosophies about persons who engage in racism after they benefited from the backs of slaves and the labor that they engaged in to make this country wealthy. So I want to digress at this point to engage in some more empowering and uplifting thoughts. And even though this discussion is not concluded, I will pick it up again next week. The purpose of these sessions or these episodes is to allow persons to become empowered. And one of the key aspects of empowerment is wealth empowerment. Now, we create things with our body, soul, spirit, and mind. We are a complete whole. We are not disintegrated. We are not just body or soul or spirit, but we have a complete system. And this complete system must be put to work in order for us to succeed. So, in another episode, I will discuss these aspects of the human person in more details and how to activate these aspects of your person to cause wealth magnetization. So, while relationships engage something that is called mental entanglement or quantum entanglement. So if we were to move from the last discussion that we were having, and if we came forward into our present time, we are going to talk about racism and discrimination, the way it impacts our life at this time. Now, I remember saying last week in response to one of the callers that called in, I remember saying to them that if a person is exposed to any environment, it causes changes in the brain structure and what is called the biogenetic pathways. And this negative experience or positive experience is passed on, and it will be present up to four generations, even though the second, third, and fourth generation did not experience the negative or the positive environment. So it is not cool to say, get over it, slavery happened, you need to move on. Because the impact, the neurological impact, the biogenetic impact of slavery is still very much present among us, and we perpetuate this within ourselves and within specifically our soul, spirit, and mind. Now, we did say that the focus of the first several sessions is on the secrets of wealth acquisition. And as I said earlier on, we produce wealth with our body, soul, spirit, and mind. Our soul, spirit, and mind are more powerful than our body. So what we do with our soul, spirit, and our mind drives what we do with our bodies. But for example, when we engage in long-distance telepathic communications, we could send messages around the globe. We can think about someone in Dubai, for example, and immediately that person's brain would light up. It means that we are connecting and we are causing neurons to fire. And anytime you have firing, you have what we call electricity, energy, and we can either produce positive or negative energies. So a powerful mind is one that functions optimally. Racism psychological insults on the brain of both the person perpetrating racism and the person receiving the racial attacks. And the reason for that is we engage with people via a neurological feedback. And this feedback means that once information comes in, it loops into our brain and it reflects back and it generates activities in the brain of the person that we are communicating with. And I want to say that communication is 10% verbal and 90% nonverbal. So when we pass by someone and this person has embedded racism inside of them, that is transferred to us immediately. And our being will respond. And it happens very, very quickly. It's called quantum entanglement or mental entanglement. And it loops back and it creates a form of synchronization. So the unspoken message or gesture or the spoken message or the spoken action or the unspoken action or when you engage in a particular behavior creates this loop. So let's sort of like put this in a form of an example. So let's say person A is racist and person B is the recipient of the negative feelings, emotions, words, behaviors, activities of the racist person. When that comes into our system, our natural system is to respond because we are born with an inherent desire inside of us and an inherent defense mechanism to defend self and to perpetuate self. So immediately what happens in the loop, we might accept the position of debasement because we just don't know how to act. But then this instinct or this inherent self-defense inside of us will also rise up, whether we know it or not. And that is more powerful than the expressed emotion, spoken words, or expressed desires or behaviors. And it sends back that feedback, and it creates it inflicts harm on the sender of the racial slurs or racial attacks or emotions, whether it's spoken or non-spoken. And what happens is that person leaves and goes forward in their day, and they will find that they are not successful. So I'm going to stop now because we have some very important people here that I invited to come on the show to talk with me about one of my products. And we're going to have them come on right after we play the next song that's coming up. And I know there are a lot of questions, but we will take up this discussion again. And everything or anything that appears to be left hanging or not, we have not gone through it in sufficient details, I will get back to it. So I want to thank you again for listening. And we are now going to listen to some soothing music as we continue. You're listening to Empowering Lives, Shaping Destinies. And again, this is a part of the New Nation project, and you're listening to Blog Talk Radio.
She's so crazy, ballin' out.
all my corn. We're gonna chase those crazy. Chase them crazy. Chase those.
Yes, Dr. Dr. Robinson, I'm sorry about that. When we listened to the man, Bob Marley, he was a man way ahead of his time. And we can listen to his music and just learn so much from it. But the sad thing is that racism hasn't changed. It has continued, and we are feeling it in more subtle ways. And the more subtle it is, the more dangerous it is. I have you on, Dr. Robinson.
Oh, yes. Yes, you can hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, great, great.
So,
yeah,
when we look at Bob Marley and his music, we know that he passed so many years ago, but his music was so forward in terms of what we were experiencing, and even now we are still experiencing the same kind of
yes.
Even though it is more comfortable.
Yes, yes. I had a great opportunity to meet him several times in Jamaica, and such a visionary, such a revolutionist, he was a man of the world. He saw things in a very unique way, coming from the part of the world that he's coming from. His concept of the universe, his concept of the world itself, the countries, the people, the history, the past history as well as the future, as he saw it, you know, his insight was deep, his thoughts were deep, and he was extremely humanitarian, and he saw the need to change the directive in which way the world was going into, which was very destructive, lots of wars, lots of sickness and disease, lots of poverty and hunger, and, you know, it's in a state that it is now. It's in a state of chaos as it is, as well as it is now. And through his music and his insight and his numerous conversations, interviews, television programs, he had, you know, accessed deeply the human condition and saw it from another perspective that gave people food for thought, if you will, to look at things in another perspective. You know, you talk about, you know, history and slavery and racism, and another thing we have to be aware of is that in the beginning, everything came out of a place now that we call Africa, and in that region of the world, people happen to be melanated people of color, and they had the dynasties, they had the royalty, they were there, and somehow it spent around to what we know now as the European people, so there's a lot of hidden, valuable historical information that we don't have as well that distorts some of the things that we see now. Like here in North America, they do not talk about the impact of the economy that slavery had to make this one of the richest countries in the world. So they don't talk about also the slaves when they were able to, they invented so many different mechanisms to make their work easier, which helped expedite the process of sugar and cotton. They don't talk about first banks, presidents, female bank presidents. Miss Baker, who opened up a bank in Pennsylvania in 1878, a free slave. They don't talk about the ones people that were here, which we know now, which we call now Indian people, Native Americans, etc. But they were people, melanated people. They were black people, you know, for all intents and purposes. So we have a lot of distortion, which is not good for the future, because if one understands their history, and I do feel that in America, if everyone really knew true history, which we do not know, there'd be a different kind of social connection between everyone. There'd be a different way that people would look at each other, because a lot of people think that Africans that were brought here in chattel slavery was just workers. They just were like cattle. You know? They just was tied up and beaten and treated, dehumanized by the system, but they were not. They were intelligent people. They created a lot of things in this country. 50,000, there's 50,000, and they can't figure out how many more, any others, but there are 50,000 inventions by African slaves and freed African slaves as well. It could be science. Tewatin Carver was one of the greatest scientists ever. He put America on the map of science. He was a freed slave. He spent years evaluating all kinds of things. He invented the manufacturing of cars. The first car was invented by Mr. Patterson, who invented the first car, but Mr. Carver invented the first automobile manufacturing in a factory where you can do several at one time. So open heart surgery, blood plasma, you know, there are medicines and research in cancer back then that was done by slaves that helped help cure leprosy, different diseases, malaria, smallpox. We had a bad case of that at one point. So they, you know, the contributions are far beyond what we are told in the American school system and the academic and historical studies. It's not even, it's very extensive, but there was, it was so covered up, so well covered up that the American institution of education in the academic community, they decided to continue to cover up. And then when racism, you know, came about, Jim Crow laws, et cetera, after the slaves were freed, then there were other kinds of laws articulated in the Constitution to continue to dehumanize and to incarcerate and to enslave people and keep them as a, you know, chattel of like cattle or something, and dehumanize them so that just so that they can continue to make money, because it was such a, between the North and the South, it was the war, and you know, it was all about money. That's not that the North was saying, oh my God, slavery is bad. It was that the finances that were in the finance that was in the South, because if you owned one slave, you had, you know, you had lots of money, you accumulated great levels of wealth. So the North didn't have any, and they felt that you know, that maybe just get rid of that at all, and maybe you could balance out the economy that way. So you know, we are misguided academically, historically, see things in different formats, but I see the slaves as a very powerful people. Because of the conditioning that they experienced in the human condition, and they were able to come out of that condition, they were able to fight forward. 1889, when the Reconstruction happened, you had 2,000 black men serving in the government. At that time, they called them statesmen. And, you know, they were threatened, and their families were threatened, their homes were burnt. They were terrorized by, you know, racist whites, and they were told that if they continue in this capacity, that they would kill them. So a lot of them just left in those positions. A lot of them left. I think majority or something of that nature. So there's a lot of things that we're not aware of historically in terms of, you know, the conditions in which people are portrayed, or people are psychologically abused, or people are made to think less of themselves. And that's why it's so important to have a relationship with the Creator. You know, I'm not talking religion, I'm talking to have a spiritual relationship with a being, superior being, more than yourself, because that creates equilibrium. It equals out everybody. So it's so important that we see ourselves, you know, not what people say. And so a lot of people were able to lean on the fact that, you know, man can determine my destiny, man can determine who I am, man can control my life. God is in control of my life. God is who God is the only one that can judge me. God is the only one that can recognize who I am. God called, you know, in the Bible they said you're a priest, you're the most elect. You know, God says some wonderful things. You're my child, you're my beloved. You know, and those things were things in which people that were enslaved, or people that were demoralized, American governmental system at that time, had to lean on something larger, bigger than themselves. And so, you know, there's a lot of credit to give to, because, you know, there's so much missing information. It's so important that we build the truth and the facts of history. So we can see the conditions that we're in now because because we did not, you know, had taught people true history in America, in Europe, in Africa, in Caribbean, Asia, across the world, history has been distorted for one reason or the other. And so a lot of times when people, especially in America, where, you know, the distortion starts with the idea that you're going to dehumanize a group of people so you can incarcerate them and hold them hostage as slaves, and you can enslave them, and you're going to abuse them psychologically, and you need a reason, you need some kind of definable reason, which the Portuguese king got the guy to write the narrative of black and white, and made black savages and made them, you know, dehumanize them in all content of his writing. And all the characteristics were like, wow, these people are barbaric. These people are savages. These people are just totally ignorant. People need to be controlled. And so that narrative went across Europe and across the world, and people bought into it. And so going forth, we know that science comes out of Africa. We know that math comes out of Africa. We know that medicine comes out of Africa. We know that all things that we use now in the modern-day societies that come forward came from that region of the world that we call Africa now. So it's so important, like Bob Marley tried to do, is reveal historical facts to people in music. One of the major things that slaves did, is they sang their way to freedom. They sang about escaping from the plantation, and so that's where you got now gospel music and things of that sort. There are so many interesting historical facts that in American history, and probably Europe as well, and probably Africa and Caribbean, and Asia, that we do not know. There are so many things we do not know about civilization, the cradle of civilization, the beginning of civilization, pyramids, and science, and how man perceived to be himself back in the beginning of times. So there's a lot of misinformation. There's a lot of things that happen going forth that is missing in the society, and it causes a lot of people to divert to feeling, you know, less than, and somebody else feeling more than. And Bob Marley basically in music gave you a rescinding understanding of different concepts of how people illegally enslave and abuse one another, because you'll find this abusive behavior is sometimes within most of the times it's within the same group, the same culture, the same race. You find similarities in behavior. They pick up a lot of the very sophisticated, back in the day they said the very sophisticated slaves that were able to go get educated, stuff like that. They picked up certain behavioral factors from massa, from the majority society, from the influential society, that made them feel that they were more prestigious than what they knew or what they experienced. So, we have to understand, we have to start back from the basics, the basic humanity, which is to treat people the way you want to be treated. Then we have to study extensively. We have to, you know, go into areas of research and understand the distorted history. One thing that we do not do in this United States of America, a lot of people don't study different philosophies, different black philosophy, black historians, black physics, Dr. Tyson, Dr. DeGrosse Tyson, or Tyson DeGrosse, I think it's Dr. Tyson, Dr. deGrasse Tyson, one of the greatest physicists right now, African-American, you know, and co-obviously, you know, going through that whole process of getting to where he's at, the neurophysicist, to get there, you know, all the things he had to go through, and now he's one of the greatest minds in the world, and lots of depend on his research and information and his studies, and to get to be one of the greatest neurophysicists. He went through a lot in school. He went through a lot of racial experiences in school. And, you know, and quite often he's asked how he handles such situations. And his thing is that, you know, he didn't accept it. It wasn't a part of his psyche. He didn't see himself in that form or that way, or where the person called him nigger or black bastard or whatever it is they were saying. He didn't take on that as a thing that he said that could hurt him, because it didn't relate to him. It was not him. So he just went on. He didn't accept and he went on. Other than the person didn't try to physically abuse him, he just passed it over, because the person, there's something wrong with the person that would, you know, refer to him in that manner. So his thing was that I did not engage. I did not respond back, you know, negative or positive, any kind of, I just didn't respond back to the person. I just went on. And I never, he said he never engaged and he never felt any, he never felt that was any implication on him. It didn't make sense to him, and he did not care to deal with it. And many of the folk that I know that are very successful in life looked at racism as a inanimate object that didn't exist, that didn't have any power or anything to them. But it does have social implications. It does affect people socially. It affects people over a period of years. You know, if you're told something and you're in that thing, especially people who are on the disadvantaged side of society, people who are impoverished, people who don't have formal education or have general education, people that didn't experience love in their family, people that are homeless, people that are in shelters, people that drug addicts and alcoholics, people that demarginalize people that live in conditions that do not encourage their talent, their mind, they do not encourage them as character, their character, they will feel, you know, and see the world or the conditioning as something affecting their life. And a lot of times that's not the case. People fall into categories. I hear people say, oh, this is the ghetto, man. This is where I live. And man, this is how we do it. I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And their behavior becomes like barbaric. It becomes, you know, more gangs and more dehumanizing, more antisocial behavior. And they sort of picked that up as a child. They've probably been abused as a child, physically, mentally, all kinds of ways. You see a lot of parents in the low-income areas, in the impoverished areas, they have a lot of verbal abuse on their little babies, a lot of cursing and a lot of demonstrative and dehumanized, demeaning words they said to this child. And I don't know, they don't understand that has effect even on a baby of 1 year old, 2 years old, 3 years old. You know, how you treat that baby, how that baby sees the world, how that baby sees behavior, how he sees mommy and daddy, how he sees their behavior to each other. If a young man do not see a loving father in the household and abusive to the mother, he will, a lot of times he takes on those characteristics and he become abusive in his relationship with his wife and his kids. And so, you know, this ignorance takes on a heavy burden to the society based on somebody's narrative of another person. So somebody is dehumanizing somebody because they don't have a prestigious home. They don't come from a family of great academics. They don't have money. They don't have, certain things. So people tend to look at them in a dehumanizing way. And they tend to take on certain characteristics and feel inferior as well. So there's a lot that history can help enhance. History can help us be more humanitarian to one another. It can help us develop a society that's beneficial to everyone. You know what I'm saying? So, I tell people governments have the ability, and governments know that they have the ability. It's been in Lynch and Einstein and different people have studied positive reinforcement and negative reinforcement. And they just show the rats as an example. And they put these rats in these boxes, right? And they put rats with a whole bunch of rats and they don't feed them. The place is dirty. And they watch the rats' behavior. And the behavior is that of, is savagery, the savage behavior. It's very barbaric. It's a very, savage behavior that's developed. It's very angry, mad. There's only one piece of food. Everybody has to eat, and they're killing each other and they're eating each other. And it was just a savagery thing that was happening. And then they took another set of rats. They kept it like four rats. They kept it clean. They kept it nice. They fed them on time, three meals a day and whatnot. And those rats acted civilized to one another. And so societies understood that you positive reinforcement, mm-hmm. negative reinforcement, that you can gravitate towards making things positive for people and negative for people. And Patrick Moynihan always talked about, U.S. Senator Patrick Moynihan wrote many books about the colors. And that was back in the 40s and the 50s. And he said, the colored people, if you continue America to dehumanize them and to put them in, these impoverished conditions, to deny them rights to ascertain education, because we didn't have the right then. It wasn't, and people don't understand, it wasn't until 1957 the Constitution was written, the amendment to the Constitution was written that blacks can go to college and blacks can go to school, even though we were doing it before. But it became, they legal, whatever they want to call it, they legalized it or they amended the Constitution to make that provision not the way it was really structured. And there's a lot of stuff in the Constitution, you can go through and see that it was, things had to be amended, whatever. But the point is, Patrick Moynihan, U.S. Senator Patrick Moynihan, was trying to tell them that they were creating one government that would be controlling or supervising or governing two different types of societies. He said one society is going to be very productive. They're going to be moving forward. They're going to be uplifting. They're going to be creating good economy. They're going to have a very uplifting environment. And the other one, he said, is going to be very impoverished, economically challenging. They're going to have a lot of social ills, a lot of antisocial behavior. They're going and they would end up in this condition. And he was talking about at that time the colored people and versus the white people. And he was saying that America was creating this environment. And the projects were one thing that we didn't have back then that he said they shouldn't build because that's going to create a ghettoism. And go, voila, look at what they did. They built the projects and look what we're dealing with. So, but, my grandfather, who only had a third grade education from South Carolina, used to say, because you're poor, his narrative was, because you're poor, you don't have to be dirty. And dirty to him meant not only physically, hygienically dirty, not clean, but your behavior, how you talk, how you treat another person. To him, that was dirty. If you were to treat a person nasty or mean, or you were to abuse your wife or your kids, that's dirty. That was his narrative, that you can be poor, but you don't have to be dirty. You don't have to have dirty clothes. You don't have to have a dirty behavior. You don't have to behave in a very negative, antisocial type of connotation. You didn't have to do that. You can still be poor and be civilized and be, you know, be a humanitarian, be kind, be considerate, act in a certain manner. You know, and that's what he was saying to us, you know, don't let the narrative of your environment drive who you are as a person, because those are two different things. So though I live in poverty, though I grew up in a struggling economy or struggling society, that does not mean I have to be barbaric, I have to be ignorant, I have to be a drug addict, alcoholic, steal, kill, lie, cheat, you know. And so I'm just saying that, you know, the narratives has been written. People have fallen to the narratives. The negative narratives have been written for poor people. Whether you were Eastern Europeans who came here, they were the first people living in the ghetto, the first people of drug addict and alcoholic, homeless, whatever. Eastern Europeans, ethnic Europeans, like your Jews, your Italians, your French, your Russians, your you know, certain Europeans were considered ethnicities, and they had heavy, you know, languages, and so there was a lot of problems. Then there came your blacks, and then we faced what we faced. But it was all coming together around the late 1800s when we defied this thing called what we know now as America. So there's a lot of things, you know, extensively, you know, that one can look at.
Well, Dr. Robinson, there are some things that I have included in my history books, and I am going to visit some of those things in one of the episodes, because I started off by saying that African history did not begin in slavery. And there is a lot of information that I try to include. One, the Africans were here more than five centuries before Columbus ever set foot here. They were the ones who taught him and showed him how to change his sails. They gave him the directions. And he knew he was coming to an entirely new civilization when
right.
he left the Azores and headed down south to what we know as the Americas. So
right.
I made an effort to include some different narratives. And what you talk about with respect to the wealth of the United States, it was built on the backs of slaves. And Dr. Eric Eustace Williams, in his thesis, Capitalism and Slavery, what he did, he produced the statistics. And he looked at the Atlantic cities, the New York, and he looked on the other side of the Atlantic, the port cities, Lisbon, Nantes, London, and he showed that they developed into major economies as a result of slavery. He looked at what they were prior to slavery and what they were once slavery started, the slave trade started. And he said, your cities were built on the backs of slaves. And this is what Bob Marley was saying. We slaved in this country, and it is time that we get the kind of the narrative change should change for us. And what I was saying earlier on, and I saw some people commenting on it, is that inside all of us there is this inherent instinctive self-preservation. So when we, for example, pass by someone who is racist, they don't even have to speak to us. They don't even have to interact with us. But because there is this quantum entanglement that is always happening, and there is this communication loop that happens, and of course we know that verbal communication is only 10% of the whole communication. And what is unspoken
is the rest is the 90%. So when, let's say, someone who is the object of racism and he passes someone who is racist, and that some people call it defilement, that energy, that negative energy just comes inside of him. His instinct rises up. And remember, our genetic pathways have all our history, all of our history from centuries past is inside there. So even though we are not taught that in the schools, it is going to well up inside of us, and it is going to fight back. And even though that person does not know that you retaliated, because you might not have retaliated openly, it is going to affect the way his spirit, body, soul, and mind behave. Racism is not an independent thing that happens to colored people, melanated people. It is something that entangles everyone. It is in the interest of everyone to end this monster, this scourge.
Amen.
Yeah.
And another thing, you know, that they don't talk very much about in history is that a lot of the people that came here from Europe at that time were outcasts of the social society of Europe. So
the elite classes of Europe, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They said we'll empty our jails.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So when you look at the type of people that all of a sudden now become in control of something, you're not going to get the kind of society that would be congenial, because you're not, these people are coming from a place of, you know, just totally being, you know, alienated from society. I don't, you know, you hear so many different things about Columbus. One thing was he was Italian. He was in Europe at the time. He was a great navigator, but he was a drunkard. And so the queen said, okay, we want to go. They thought the world was square and you fall at the end of it. If you go too far, you fall at the end. So she says, I don't want any, you know, good soldiers, any higher class of soldiers to get lost or killed. But, you know, just take the ones that we don't, they're not have any value to the crown. And so they said, well, this guy over here, you know, he's good what he does, but, you know, it's Italian. Drunkard, you could use him. And so she offered him the job. He collected others, you know, with him. And quite obviously, he collected whoever he can collect. But I'm saying that the expectation is that you're not going to get a society from people who have been ostracized or people who have experienced being you know, treated and demonstrative or dehumanizing, a marginalizing way. You're not going to get those people to create a society that's going to be equal in justice and democracy and all that stuff, because they haven't experienced that. It's like all the abusers abuse. So the child abuser is asked, why you continue to abuse? When you were abused, you didn't like it. But, you know. And so people duplicate this bad behavior. And so when people don't remember, like before they became the 13 colonies, and the reason they became the 13 colonies before it became the United States, because they had a lot of internal fighting between Europeans who were coming here from different parts of Europe who didn't have a good relationship while they were in Europe. You know what I'm saying? And so you found that they brought those animosities with them when they came to this new world. And so there was a lot of fighting and killing going on when they were formulating this new society, that's, if you will, that they were making up in their mind, they were going to form this new structure. And so it was hard to keep them, like, you know, casual, keep them together, to organize them. And so they decided to start this thing called the 13 colonies, the union that they decided to put together, these 13 colonies, and organize themselves in that way. So that these people could stop, you know, acting the way they act. And, okay, you're over here and you're here and you own this and I own this, and started organizing these colonies so that people could have structure. But they had no structure in the beginning, you know, when they started off. It was every man for himself, you know what I'm saying? Just come, do what you want to do, and that didn't work. That there was nobody to say, well, listen, you know, but they were used to structure. They were used to a king and a queen and leadership back in Europe. You know, somebody told somebody told somebody. It was a system of control. So here they are now. Now they're loose and they don't have this control, and it took them to a bad place. And so in order to try to keep them together, they said, okay, we're gonna organize these 13 colonies. You're gonna be over here, and I'm gonna be over there. You know, so forth and so on. You know.
So we're going to just change the pace a little bit. I have a couple of interesting people here who agreed to come and chat with us tonight. But before we let them come on, before I call them on, I want to talk about two of my services. And the first one is the training that I am doing. I have a training that is coming up on Saturday of this week, 2 days from today. And that training is integrating spirituality and religion into the therapeutic process. And what it is that the American Psychological Association, American Psychiatric Association, has identified, as you were saying earlier on, Dr. Rob, that religion and spirituality play a very, very important role in the lives of people. And what they have found is that the health and the well-being that come to people who are who use religion and spirituality to address their problems, they find that they do better. The healing, the rate of healing is better. Their outcomes are just generally better. So that training is going to be done on Saturday of this week. And the people who would want to be a part of that, you could go on to my website. I'll give some more information on that in just a little bit. But these trainings is a part of the prerequisite for persons who are going to be seeking funding under my organization for addressing issues such as violence and aggression. And my term that I use is APR, aggression in proximity relationships, like you were talking about, the way parents interact with each other and the impact on children. And of course, you know, that kind of negative training or positive training starts in boom. So I'm going to be doing that. It is an accredited course, and the people will get certification, and it is a prerequisite for anyone who wants to get funding for their program. They must do the trainings prior to receiving the funding being allocated to them. Because there is funding that is identified for the program, people are only required to pay the registration fee, which is nearly $20. And of course, when funds are disbursed, the full course of the full cost of the program funds from the monies that will be disbursed to them. But it is a non-competitive grant that are available, which means that we will fund the project to its appropriate level at the right time. So you can log on to my website. It's C as in Charlie, H as in Harry, A as in Adam, Y as in Yellow, E as in Early, L as in London. So it's www.chayel.net, and you can register. Once you get on my website, you will also see that I have some new offerings there. And one of the offerings that I am making available is precognitive insights. There are other things that I do, such as dream analysis. I also do gematria for people who want to understand the number of their needs. You know, the Bible says, teach us the number of our days so that we could apply our hearts to wisdom. So I do offer that service as well. And I have made it very, very inexpensive so that people can log in and they can book sessions. Precognition. What is precognition? Some people have this atypical brain structure and they are able to know and see things that are unknown and things that are in the future. It's called PSI, or it's also called, people call some of them prophets, and they call them seers and psychics and so on. Now, when you get into this kind of service offering, there is a principle behind it. The scripture says if you're going to a prophet, you cannot go empty. You must take a gift, and that gift means you must take monies to the prophet. So it is a biblical practice in the Torah to have a fee that is charged for these services. And I've used those structures as my guideline for the fees that I am charging. Now, the Torah also has guidelines on how to identify someone who is a true prophet. You have prophets, seers, psychics, there are a dime a dozen. And not all people who function in this capacity are prophets. Some of them use medium. They might be tarot cards, card readers, or they might read tea leaves, or they have some system, logical systems, where they could predict things, or they can generalize and move from generalization to specific. So how do you know when you have someone who is authentic in what they do? And I invited three persons. One of the persons said to me she wasn't able to get on, and I'm hoping she can get on next week. But I have two special persons, and I'm seeing them here. I have Ms. Shadeen Anglin, and I met Ms. Shadeen in Jamaica about 4 years ago. So we're going to open the mic for her, and she's going to talk about three things. She'll talk about how we met, if I had an impact on her life, what that impact is, and then she will talk about what she's currently doing and how it relates to our meeting, why she's doing and how she's doing what she's doing right now. So we have Ms. Anglin, and she is in Maryland, and we are going to welcome her to the call shortly. We also have Ms. Taylor, Marilyn Taylor, and you know, they say a prophet is not without honor, except in his own country. So in other words, people on the outside will see your giftings, but people who are your family members, they don't. Well, I have family members who beg to differ because of their experiences with me. Before I called Ms. Anglin, I called one of my siblings and I said, do you think I am a prophet? She said, yes. I said, wow. And she said, she told me, and then she reminded me of one of my siblings who came to her house one day and he was scared. And he said to her, that girl called me over to her house and told me things that nobody knew except me. And he was scared. And she kind of told him, no, she's responsible with what she does and what she knows. And he was able to be a little bit more comfortable. So we're going to call on Ms. Anglin. She's also an author, and she's going to talk a little bit about her books as well. I am now going to unmute your mic, Ms. Anglin.
Hi, good evening to you, Dr. Kanarik, and your listeners. It's so good to be here. Praise God.
Good evening. Good evening, my dear.
All right. So we're going back to 2018 when I first came in contact with you. Now, it all happened in the month of June. I'll say what happened the evening before, because it was like a prelude to what happened the day I met you, which was going to be the following day. On June 7th, I went home from work. I was actually a radio broadcaster, in fact, a newscaster. And I went home that day feeling really down. I had a rough day at work. And the Spirit of the Lord speaking to me about a particular spirit that I was up against in the workplace. And so I went home, I threw down my bag and everything, and I started to go into prayer. And interestingly, while I was in prayer, after dealing with that particular situation, I saw a silhouette of someone in front of me. And I asked the Lord who this person was. It was a male. And the Lord told me, that is your husband. I was not asking the Lord anything, any husband. I was dealing with a spirit. This thing that he was now showing me had nothing to do with what I had come to him about. And so then my attention was now veered toward this new thing that he had interrupted my prayers to show me. I wanted to know more. So I thought that I was going to seek him the whole night because I needed an answer. I felt like I wanted some clarity because I saw something. What I saw was a silhouette, in that I couldn't see the detailed feature of this individual. However, I just didn't like. There was something that I saw in the image that I was refuting. I was not going to accept that. So I determined in my heart that I was going to stay up the whole night in prayer. The following morning, I would have had a driving test too in Jamaica. And so I was also asking the Lord to have them call on me to do the test first, because I just felt like there was a bit of advantage when you're the first person to be called. Anyway, so usually the Lord would send an angel to speak to me. Sometimes when he didn't send an angel, he would speak to me in my dreams or my vision. This is the kind of relationship that we had. I've never been the kind of person to call for persons externally, because my father speaks to me. And I usually rely heavily on directly from him, or as I said, there have been times when an angel would come. So I was expecting the answer from him, either through his audible voice or through an angel. I waited up. I knew I needed to rest because of the test I had the morning of the 8th. However, I was just tarrying because I really wanted some clarity pertaining to what he had shown me. I waited until my eyes began to burn. I didn't get any sleep because every time I prayed and I would force myself to fall into a doze, hoping that he would open up my ears and speak to me, absolutely nothing happened. And so by the time it was 7 o'clock for the test and everything, I was already just drained. I had not slept. So I had gone almost 2 days or a full day without sleep. Anyway, as it turned out, because I'm going to show you that God was just setting me up for something. He had actually heard my prayers. He had actually had a plan. he came up with a plan to answer me, but I just was not going to get the answer the way I had expected. See, I had limited him. I limited him to speaking to me just audibly and through dreams and visions, but he was about to blow my mind in terms of how he responded. So as proof that he actually was listening to me and to everything that I had brought to the table a few hours before, did you know that when I went to the driver's license place, okay, I got to be quick, I know, but when I went there, they had some cards on which were persons' names, and the main individual, I guess the chief person, the chief organizer, he started to call names, name before mine. My name was called second. And that was for the first stage of the process, you know, to do the test on the road. I was a bit disappointed because my prayer to the Lord was that I wanted to be first. Listen to me. All I know is this. You see, the next time this man came before us and was calling names, I don't know how it happened. It should not have happened. Okay? But my name was called first. I was the first person to drive. I don't know how God just flipped the thing. I don't know. That's not my business. But he answered me. I was the first person. And it went well. And all the glory goes to him. So I went to work immediately after that. It was a usual Friday morning. Again, this was the 8th of June, 2018. I was minding my own business in that I was gathering news items to be presented on the radio at 5 o'clock. And so it was around 2 in the afternoon when I was working closely with the engineer as we tried to get some clips, audio clips for the news item or the news stories. I just know that while I was in the room with this engineer, he and I were there by ourselves. I just saw when the door was opened and an employee who is stationed downstairs, she had beside her this strange lady, okay? This lady, her hair was parted in two, and it was about shoulder length, a dark lady. And I have seen visitors come to the place before, but clearly there must have been something special about this particular visitor because this one was being introduced to us. So what we were doing in the room was a little bit interrupted by what was going to be an introduction. The lady, the staff member, she said to us, like she would say, A and B, this is Dr. Kanarik, and vice versa. Now, let me slow down because this is where it gets really intense. So usually, after an introduction, two persons would say, oh, nice to meet you, right? I know I said that to Dr. Kanarik. I said, nice to meet you. And of course, the expectation is that after that nice, that humorous moment, both persons would, you know, continue to do what they were doing. Funny enough, this lady was still standing at the door, and she just wouldn't budge. And guess what? She was staring right at me. There were two of us in the room, but her eyes were fixed on Shadeen. At that time, this was a skinny Shadeen, by the way. It was a Shadeen who was experiencing transition, and I was having all these back-to-back seasons of fasting because every time the Lord showed something to me that I didn't understand, I would go in his presence and get the understanding, and it was just me and the Lord, me and he. I didn't want anything. I felt like I could live the rest of my life being a single individual with just me and the Lord. I had not yet started ministering. Nothing of the sort. I would have already had a stint on radio, but that was just about it. I wasn't preaching or anything. But I had always said in my heart, I'm never going to get any kind of professional training or studies when it comes to ministry or the Word of God, because I felt like I didn't want to attribute any praise to people, to human beings. So anyhow, as this woman was staring at me, okay, I started to repeat, like, the introduction because it was just so awkward, she looking at me. So I was like, hi, I am Shadeen. This woman was still staring at me, and she said absolutely nothing. She broke her silence, and the first thing she said to me, this was like now me being draped. She said to me, sorry. It was just like yesterday. I'm sorry. She said to me, the Lord has sent me to you. I said, really? Sorry. And you began to speak. At first, I was being very pessimistic because I was really hoping to turn you off. In my head, my father would not be sending some woman to me because I know what I had asked him the night before. And I was anticipating him to speak to me directly like he usually did. Now, here comes this woman just blurting out everything just like that. I mean, here's something that I'll always remember about that encounter with you, Doc. Listen, I've seen and I've encountered a lot of persons who have presented themselves as prophets before. Mm-hmm. Some say, I am prophetess this, and some say, I am prophet that. But I'll say this. In all my experiences of having people speak to me in the name of the Lord, this was unlike anything I had ever experienced in my entire Christianity or Christian journey. Never. You looked at me. You were so poised. You were so composed. You spoke to me with authority, yet your voice was so soft. I mean, your listeners can tell you are soft-spoken. How does someone speak so softly with so much authority? See, it was not even you who was speaking to me. It wasn't you. I knew who was speaking to me, and it was not you. I recognized my father's voice through you. That's what grabbed my attention. See, my father was speaking to me. He was telling me. He wasn't asking me any questions. Listen, you weren't asking me anything. You were just telling me. And there was a time when it's almost like my flesh wanted to make you look stupid. My flesh knew exactly what you were saying, but at the same time, it's almost like it wanted to make you look like you don't know what you were talking about until the Lord said something. Listen to me. Nobody had ever said to me before. Nobody. Nobody in my workplace knew about that. No one. And that was the moment when I just gave up. I yielded and I said, yes, it is so. In fact, some of what you're saying had already been said to me before. One of the things you said to me, the Lord says, he will release your husband when you get enrolled in school. I was so mad. I was so mad. I was mad with you. I was mad with God. Who was speaking through you. I was mad with everybody. But let me tell you, I remember saying to you, I mean, but why would he do that? Why? And then the response was, there are some elements of the word that he wants you to know, that you must know for the ministry to which he has called you. And let me tell you something. When I got that word, I was almost, you know, confused and frustrated because here comes me now having to seek his face to get some clarity on which institution to apply to. And, you know, I started to things. And then when I realized the tuition fees and everything, something said to me, you know what, Shadeen? If God is sending you to school, then he has it all figured out. And sure enough, he had it all figured out today. 2022, 3 years or so later, 4 years later, I can say this, that by God's grace, God has raised me up as a voice to the nations. He has given me a platform that I never saw I would have had. I used to do radio broadcasting, and I feel like my audience was just limited to people who were in my territory, which, as you know, was Jamaica. But the platform God has given to me on Facebook through His grace today is one that allows me to reach people from across the world. I speak to people from as far as India. I have persons listening to me from Australia, Canada, England, you name it. And not only do they listen, but these are people who have received of their deliverance, their healing through the power of the Holy Spirit. And a lot of these individuals have supported my ministry. Whatever it is that the ministry has to offer, they help to support. Hallelujah. And I just want to give God thanks. If I were to ask the people, in fact, they have said it to me in their testimonies, that it is the word that grabbed them. See, I had to go through and listen to the instruction God gave me through you, because a lot of the persons who are in my corner today, a lot of the people who know me today, they could not have known me or had ears to hear me had I not obeyed the instructions of the Lord through your mouth. I am better off today because I obeyed the Lord. I am who I am today by God's grace, even though I know there is room for growth, because I followed God's instruction to go to school, and I have kept in my heart all the other things that were said to me, and I've lived to see much of them manifest. You did mention I am an author. Yes. I had to learn to obey my father's voice, and one of the things I found myself doing was writing. And at the right time in 2020, the word of the Lord came to me in my spirit heavily that I needed to start writing my testimony of how I got converted. That is how I've Seen Jesus has been birthed. In I've Seen Jesus, Details of a Divine Call to Intimacy and the Supernatural, I talk about how the Lord called me to ministry. I talk about how I got my conversion, how the experience occurred. I talk about the encounters I have with the Lord Jesus. I talk about the relationship and some of the things He has shown me in dreams and visions. And that is that. I mean, I just thank God for what He has done through you. Doc, are you there?
I am sorry, Ms. Shadeen. I just got caught up with what you were saying, because tonight is the first time I'm hearing most of what you're saying. But you did seek me out. You did say to me, I searched, Shadeen said, I searched all over the internet for you, because I just wanted to connect with you again. And I work like that in people's lives. They see me one time, and then that's it. They never see or hear from me again. But Shadeen was persistent, and I was shocked. And I said, well, Shadeen, how did you find me? And she told me how she went about doing her search. But I have another person here in the studio, and she will tell you who she is. Her name is Ms. Marilyn Taylor, and I'm going to unmute her. She'll tell you who she is, what is her relationship with me, and anything else she wants to say concerning my impact on her life. Mrs. Duncan. Ms. Taylor.
Okay. Hi, everyone. I hope you're all doing well. And I hope you can hear me, because I'm driving. Okay. I'm driving safely with my headphones. Okay. As Shadeen was speaking about, I will say Yvette, because that's who she is. She's my sister. So I have never gotten used to the Dr. Generic. to Yvette to me. Interestingly, as Yvette started talking about a prophet having honor, I went right back to the time that Yvette was born. Yvette is 4 years younger than I am, and I can remember the day Mommy brought her home, which is, I was like 4 years old, but I remember exactly Alyssa coming home and being so happy to have Alyssa's sister. We have many sisters, but I was just exceedingly happy with this little sister. Either way, as we continue to grow up and, you know, we moved on, got married and so on. And I remember Yvette always being there for me as I go through different struggles of my life. But one time in particular, we were in Trinidad together. And Yvette was doing a presentation at the town hall in Port of Spain. And I went to support her. And after the presentation, there were some people who she was going to talk with. And I sat there with the group. There were people that I knew and actually forgotten them because, you know, they passed through my life like many years ago when we were in camp, summer camp. And she started talking with them, and she stopped and she said, oh, you, the Lord told me, whatever plans you have, forget it, because you are going to be back in Trinidad and Tobago, because you have work to do there. And I looked at her and was like, yeah, right. I have no plans like that. But long story short, I did about 3 stints with the Ministry of Health because that gave my background. And I worked with the hospitals as an administrator. I worked with the Regional Health Authority as a director. And my last stint in Trinidad was at the Ministry of Health level doing quality. 2 months ago, after leaving there in 2019, I got a call from a young lady, and she said, I wanted to let you know, you may forget me, you may have forgotten me, but I want you to know that the surgery that I needed since I was a child, that you were instrumental in getting it done. She said I had somebody donated for me to have the surgery. I cannot give you the name. But I believe that you were sent here just for me. She had a birth defect and she had gone through all kinds of places including she went to the newspapers, and I contacted her after she had an article in the newspapers, and she was able to get her surgery. And she kept my number to call me to tell me this. So sometimes our work is for a big number of people and sometimes for a small number of people. And I know that through Yvette's perception and her spirituality, she has helped me to be in the place where God wants me to be, and to be able to do his work. Yvette wrote a book called The Spent Arrow. It was one of her first books. And I read that book. It made a big, big difference in my life. Because it spoke about simple things that we take for granted and how we think and how we speak things into our lives. And everywhere I've worked, I make sure I order 10 based on how many people I'm supervising or whatever is going on, and order those books to the people and share it. Every single one of those books that I've distributed, people come back to me and say, what a difference. And this, Yvette wrote this book long before people were talking about speaking things into your life and manifesting. Well, like she was way far beyond all of the recent talk about speaking positive things into your life. peaceful person who doesn't have a fight with anyone. And I think that my family is blessed to have me as a father. That's our last sibling, actually. She's the baby. And, and all of the encouragement, support, spiritual guidance, prayers that she's given us. And it's a pleasure. And it's a privilege for me to be able to speak about who she is as a person, as a prophetess, as learned beyond. We can travel. We traveled from Miami to Canada, and she just had so many things to share with me about God, about history, and so on. That I'm proud to have a sister like Yvette. So that's my contribution. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And, you know, it means a lot when those that are very close to you heard speak well of you, because the hardest place to live right is in the presence of your family. And Marilyn is the sister that is just above me. There is we have a male sibling. I have a brother. We have a brother between us. But we have been quite close. And one of the things she's always said to me is that I said to her, whatever situation you're going through right now, you learn the lesson that you need to learn, because it is only then that God is going to take you out of that situation and put you to the next level. So she repeats that to me very regularly, and I want to thank her for the testimony that she has given on my behalf. We have had people here since the program started. And even though we only have 10 more minutes, there is at least one person that I would call. I would open up the mic for that person to share something with us. And I'm calling 571-264. Your microphone is open. 571-264. Your microphone is open. Five seven one two six four. Your microphone is open. Okay, something might be going on there, but I want to just at this time allow Ms. Shadeen, if she has two more minutes, then we go back to Mrs. Duncan. And if she has just two more minutes of anything she wants to say. And then I would have my very, very good friend, Dr. Robinson. I think about how Dr. Robinson and I met. And he has been, I've never met him in person per se, but he is a very, very close friend of mine. I value his friendship. He is like a brother to me. He's more than a friend. And I, you know, sometimes we never say the things that we need to say, but I want him to know that. So Ms. Shadeen, if you have anything that you want to add, if we just give you a chance, do that now.
Okay.
Your mic is open.
Yes. One of my avid listeners has just asked me a question. The question was, Shadeen, are you married? I didn't know you are married. So I guess the person was listening to what I had said earlier. So, no, but guess what? I know everything that I need to know about that individual. And I want to blow your mind. My husband, he actually knows me. So So, I mean, God has just shared with me all that I need to know. So I didn't quite tell my Facebook fans. I mean, Dr. Kanarik, they're going to be in my ears now, you know. So I had to pick and choose what I said. Because some of the things I have to leave. I have to keep them in suspense. They can't know too much at once. But just a reminder to your listeners that they can get a copy of my book, I've Seen Jesus, Details of a Divine Call to Intimacy and the Supernatural, on all Amazon platforms. It's available both in paperback and Kindle format. There are other items that you may check out as well if you look for my name, Shadeen, S-H-A-D-E-E-N, Anglin, A-N-G-L-I-N. My email, ShadeenAnglin2@gmail.com, can also be used to reach out if you have ministry questions.
Thank you, Ms. Shadeen. Ms. Taylor, anything more from you?
It's interesting that you brought up the incident about having to learn lessons. I remember that clearly. You were at my house and we were walking in the neighborhood, and you said, well, two things you said. I am tired hearing you say you have no money. And you put some money in my hand, and you said a prayer, and I'm good. I've been good since then. And then when you told me about learning lessons, I said, I want to learn it quickly. And you said, unless you learn the lessons, you're going to move to the next place. I can tell you, where I work, my staff, they always say, how can you be so calm?
Yeah.
And that's because I've learned the lessons and grown from it. So thank you again, Yvette. Thank you.
You're welcome. Very welcome. I want to thank you for coming on. I want to thank you for the positive words, Ms. Shadeen. You are captivating. And again, her name is Shadeen Anglin, S-H-A-D-E-E-N, Anglin, A-N-G-L-I-N. And Ms. Taylor Duncan, she does do B2B work, usually in the healthcare field. She's quite capable and has well qualified with a lot of experience behind her. Dr. Robinson.
Yes. Hello?
Yes, Dr. Robinson. Anything
okay.
that you want to add?
I think you have two more callers. I don't know if you want to give them a minute apiece, and I'll just.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Say goodnight.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. So I see 203-451. I'm going to unmute your mic. 203-451.
Good evening, Dr. Robinson. How are you, sir?
Oh, fine. Thank you. That's the great, melodious voice of the man himself, Dr. Joubert. Like Missionary Baptist Church, Norwalk, Connecticut.
Yes, sir. I had Bible study tonight, but I got your text, and I said, you know, I hadn't had a chance to come on, and I just want to encourage you to continue to do the great work that you're doing there. And God is with you. God's blessings on all of the hearers on the line tonight. And Dr. Robinson is a member and a son of the New Light Missionary Baptist Church, located at 22 Lexington Avenue in South Norwalk, Connecticut. We love him dearly, asking God's blessings upon everyone on his mind today and him as well. God bless you, sir. Talk to
you
soon.
Thank you so much. Say hello to Dr. Kanarik, which is her show, Dr. Kanarik as well.
God bless her, and whatever you're doing with him, I know it's okay. God bless you. Thank you so much. Appreciate you.
Oh, thanks. Thank you. Thank you. And we have another caller, 914-979. I'm going to unmute your mic, and you can just say something very quickly, Jack.
Yes, indeed. This is Dr. Benjamin Bridges, and I just wanted to say, yeah, I'm glad to see you get a few minutes on the line here, because my phone was, the battery's just about out. And then I recharged it and got together with my prayer and meditation group today. and this evening, and it was really nice because we put out some good energy there to be about being a blessing to our community. And also, I'm glad to see, my sister, that you're here to share some positive energy on, you know, the aspect of dealing with our health and helping us to come together in dealing with that, because that's very important. So many times, to be honest with you, the medical industry is, you know, not really there to help to heal you, but to make money off of you. So it's a good thing when we can come to people within our own community that we can trust in regards to wanting to really help to heal us. But anyway, being at the time is really short, you know, I'm going to end it right here. Just hope and pray that we would definitely be able to make our way to the mountaintop of success, where we will achieve our very best.
So we want to say good night to all our listeners. We want to thank you for tuning in. We will be here again tomorrow night with Dr. James Winborn. And again, we will be here on Friday night with Dr. Ron Robinson, the man himself. I want to thank you all for listening, and good night, and God bless you.
Yeah.